Yeah, there you go, Steelers, right. All right, well, just a few things. Yesterday, we started the Big Book over for the 10th time. I did some stuff I haven't covered before. I went through the covers for the first edition, all the editions. We looked at the first few pages. I thought it was really good. I got a lot out of it. I spent some time planning it. It was fun. It'll be on the site late Monday. Send it to Lau, and he'll put it up on post, and then I'll publish it. The Saturday before, if you weren't here, we finished the book, A Vision for You. We covered the last few pages, and it was really a special meeting, and that is up on the site. Last Sunday night, we covered and finished the Resentment Inventory Instructions, and that went up on Friday, and we went through the columns, and we went through the information we learn about ourselves and our the nature of our wrongs, and I thought it was a pretty good review. Wednesday night, we covered the 10th step in the steps we took, and he had a special way, Joe McHugh, the Joe and Charlie, of looking at the steps, making them very simple, and we had a really good meeting, and we're going to finish the steps we took this Wednesday. If you have your book, bring it. And if not, I have copies of the handout. Tonight we are on the fourth step in the Big Book. We're on page 67. And I don't know how many times I've read these pages. I can't imagine how many meetings I've done on this, maybe 40. But every time I look at it, I try to ask God to help me see something new, help see more truth. And this is such a spiritual book that I always see new words that weren't in there before, and I always see new things. And we're looking at fear. And fear, somebody said, is false evidence appearing real. Think about that. And then I heard someone say, fears are just old ideas expecting resentment from them. Now think about it. Because if you look at all your old ideas and all your resentments, you'll see how they're based on old ideas you have that have to do with your fears. And tonight we're just going to look at the words. We're just going to read it and see what we can get out of it. At this meeting, we look at fear. We use what's called the second step proposition exercise. It's on the site and the resources. I have handouts. It's called the second step proposition because on page 53 of the Big Book, it says, is God everything or nothing? And I have fear when I choose God nothing and me everything. Whatever I'm managing, playing the director, causes fear. And all my old ideas about me running the world and how I'm going to solve my instincts of life, that all causes my fears. And so we'll be doing that. And then after we finish the conduct inventory, we'll look at the steps we took on the fourth step. I think it's worthwhile to spend time to look at it thoroughly. We're not in a hurry, and we always get something new out of it. It says, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and his wife. So the first thing you do to talk about fear is they're looking at their resentment example on page 65. And it says, I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. And it shows you how for each resentment, there's really fear with it. And fear really causes all of our anger. And so we talk about resentment being the number one offender, but the resentments are all caused by our fears. So Mr. Brown, he paid attention to my wife, so that caused fear. He's going to lose his wife. And then when we talk about fear, when we do inventory, what a lot of people like to do is, okay, you're afraid you're going to lose your wife. But what fear does that produce? Fear that you'll be alone, fear that you're not good enough, fear that people will think you're worthy if your wife's going to leave you. See, each fear on a different level goes down, and that's called, I think, the boilerplate way of doing inventory. And I've passed out before the Carrie C. inventory on how she looks at fears, and I'll be getting that for you next week. That's very helpful. And you see, if Brown may get my job at the office, that affects my self-esteem. And then if I lose my job, people will think I'm no good, and then people won't love me, and then I won't be worthwhile, and people think I'm a loser, you see that? And then I won't have any money, and then if I don't have any money, people think I'm no good, and they'll think I'm a loser. You see how all the fears, just they come together, and with each resentment, there is a fear. Even if you didn't do anything to cause the resentment, let's say you had something really terrible happen to you, and you're still angry about it. And what would be the fear behind that? Well, the fear might be if you let go of it, then you can't use that as an excuse ever for anything that's happened in your life. And then you look at how you may have used that horrible thing that happened to you and held on to it to use that as an excuse for not doing certain things out of fear. And so it's very helpful when you do this to look at it in detail. There are plenty of workshops where people spend hours on fear, different ways to inventory it, and it gives you a lot of information once you really look at your innermost fears. Like his employer is unreasonable, just overbearing. Well, threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense account. Well, yeah, if I wasn't drinking and padding my expense account, and what's the fear that I'll lose my job and I won't have any money and then my wife will leave me? And it goes on and on and on. And so that's how fears are always intertwined with the resentments. And when you do your resentment inventory and you look at every fear, then you've got a lot of lists of fears that you have just by doing that, especially if you look at them in detail. And a lot of people will do the inventory and say, yeah, I had fear, but you need to look at what is the fear, and then what follows from that fear, and follow it through, and you learn a lot about yourself. And those are called old ideas because they're not necessarily true. You tell yourself they're true, but they're not necessarily true. And why do I say that? Well, the third column that we talked about is the instincts of life whenever they're threatened. And just to go back to page 64 and 65, it says at the bottom that if I were angry, what was threatened? Was it my self-esteem? Well, how is that threatened? It's how I feel about myself. And if I'm threatened in any way about how I feel about myself, then I get angry. But who decides how you have to look at things? Is your self-esteem based upon what other people think of you, or is it based upon your relationship with God and how you're serving God and others? And then like our pocketbooks, money. Anybody ever get afraid of money, losing money? Well, if it's ever threatened, what you think you need in money. See, that's a old idea. I need a certain amount of money. And then if anybody threatens what I think I need in that area of my life, then I get afraid. Well, who decided what I needed for money? I did. And so these instincts are based upon it's where an extreme example of self will run riot. We set these set ideas on what we have in all areas of our life, and they're threatened anyway, we get upset. And they don't have to be threatened, because they don't have to even exist. You can see it differently. And it says the solution is that God will provide everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform your work well. So if your instincts of life are God-centered, and God will determine how you get your instincts fulfilled based upon serving Him and others and playing the role He assigned. It doesn't say that you shouldn't be concerned about having money to pay the rent, but it says get a job, go to work, you see. And so the resentments inventory and looking at your fears, because it said on page 67, which we reviewed last week, spending a little bit of time on it, because this is really what determines the quality of our sobriety, how we deal with anger and how we look at anger and how we look at fear. And it says, referring to the list again of everybody angry at, putting out the minds of the wrongs others had done, I resolutely look for my own mistakes. I'm looking at my mistakes. And one of my mistakes, it says, whereas I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened. And where were my fears triggered by my old ideas, which may be mistaken thinking? And remember, we have to let go of all of our old ideas, absolutely, or the result's nil. And so that's some information about the fears in regard with resentment. And it says, this short word somehow touches about every aspect of your life. I'm back on page 67 again. Touches every aspect of my life. There's no area of my life that isn't touched by my fear. I don't know about you, but fear dominated my life before I came here. And in sobriety, I had to learn how to use these steps to deal with fear so it didn't dominate me anymore. And of course, we get fear, but when I see it now, I realize, and we're going to look at the spiritual exercises, I understand I don't have to be afraid anymore. That's a choice. And I have the freedom from fear by doing this step. So we'll look and see what they tell you. Does anybody agree that fear touches every aspect of our lives? All of our aspect of our lives. And it's an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of my existence was shot through with it. Now, what they're using here as an analogy is that if you were going to take a tapestry of Michael's life and put it up on the wall, and it could be the most beautiful picture. It could have been the most beautiful picture. It probably could have been if I'd been God-centered, not self-centered. But being self-centered, that picture has these threads of woven through it that are destroying it, and it looks really bad. And what we want to do now is we look at that picture of our life when we come in here, and we don't want to live that way anymore, and then we hope each day that the picture of our life each day won't have fear woven through it and make it ugly. And how would you know? You can look at your day. Where were you afraid? How did you react? How did you deal with your fear? And we don't have to be dominated by fear anymore because we have the ability now to use tools to be free of fear. So let's see what they say. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. What do they mean by that? Well, you're afraid at work that somebody's doing something and they're going to get your job. So you react to that by taking measures to ensure that that doesn't happen when you don't even know if that was true. And then when you do that, you may harm somebody and then you get in trouble and then you're going to lose your job. And then you say, well, gee, I was just trying to protect myself from this other person taking the job and now I lost my job. There's so many examples of that. But we couldn't see it. We couldn't see how we started the ball rolling with our fear. Did anybody react out of fear and do things that harmed themselves or others?
Yes.
My whole harms inventory was the whole thing. And it says on page 63, it says on page 62, it says, I invariably found that at some time in the past I've made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And it was all fear-based. And when you look back and I see all the terrible things that I did, it was all fear-based. And it's not pretty. But we don't have to live that way anymore. So it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune which we felt we didn't deserve. And when you hear people come in, they're new. They'll tell you their resentments, but they don't see how their fear caused them. They only see what they did, but they don't see how we set the ball rolling. And then if you don't see that, you can never be free of the resentment. So freedom from fear and freedom from resentment go hand in hand. And remember, we inventory our wrongs. The wrongs are the result of being self-centered, me trying to manage the world to get what I want. And when I do that, I'm angry, I'm fearful, and I harm others. And that's the story that we look at in step four. Now we're looking at the fear part. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. then there's so many ways that fear stole me. It stole my peace of mind. It stole my relationship with God. It stole my relationships with other people. It caused me to harm others. It caused me to have an unmanageable life. It caused me to try to drink or use to fix that feeling. And then all the things that happened as a result of that. You should write down how fear stole from you. But you can't have peace and serenity if you're living in fear. They can't exist at the same time. You can't have a relationship with God if you're in fear. You're blocked out. And fear is really the greatest manifestation of self-centeredness. A self-centered person is afraid. You're going to be afraid of what you did, what you didn't do, what they're going to find out. It's constant fear. I don't know about you, but towards the end, I remember I didn't even like to look at the mail. It sounds preposterous, or answer the phone. And for years, if anybody ever came to like the office door, I'd say, gee, what did I do? You know, it could never be good, right? It was always this fear-based. I joke around here that if somebody doesn't like me, they won't come back. And I joke around it, but that's part of my self-centered personality, that I'm dependent on what other people think of me, and I try not to be that anyway anymore. But if any of you get perfect, let me know. And the thing is, that's so ingrained, the fear of not being good enough, fear of failure, fear of lack of approval is so ingrained in most alcoholics that it's very hard to be rid of that, but we can see it now. And we can make fun of ourselves, we can laugh at ourselves. So be sure you all come back next week, okay? All right, I'm taking attendance. It's, you know, we have to laugh at ourselves. We took ourselves too seriously when we came in here. And actually the other thing is we believed everything we thought. And now I don't have to believe my fears. I know they're not true. I made a decision. I'm pretty good at doing this lately. You know, it was about 2 years ago that I was not going to spend any time in fear anymore. It was such a waste of time. It was such a waste of time. And I said, whatever I was afraid at the moment, I said, I'm going to put in the God box. I have a God box. And I said, I'm going to look at everything I put in the God box. It had 12 years of 14 years of stuff in there. And it was all the same stuff. It was just different things. And I don't want to waste any more time in fear. It's a horrible feeling. And it says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. So you can review your fears with resentment, and then you can look at your other fears. Now we're talking, I'm not talking about fear of jumping out of an airplane, or fear of getting too close to the edge of a tall building, or if you see a rattlesnake, fear is very useful. What I'm talking about is self-centered fears, fears that arise out of my self-will, my fears rising out of how I see my life should be and how people should be. So it said, we reviewed our fears, we put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. So you have fears in connection with your resentments, and then you may have other fears. And I heard this one speaker, I really like him a lot, listened to this years ago. He told his sponsor he didn't have any fears. No fears at all. He's a tough guy. So the guy says, well, what about snakes? You know, and what about this and that? And then he said at the end, what about fear of failure? You know, and then he goes, cheap shot. You know. And these fears keep us from doing things that might have been good for us, right?
Yes.
And they keep us from taking actions that would have been good. And there's so many ways. When you look at your fourth step when you come here and you see what you did and what you didn't do in your life, and it's not pretty, but you can see how fear and relying on yourself caused all of it. And it says, we asked, so you have fears with your resentment and then you have other fears. And that's where we're going to look at the second step proposition, which is the question, is God everything or nothing? And it says in there, what I want doesn't matter. We have to write that all over, put it in our car, put it in our dashboards, everywhere. Because when I have something that I think matters, then it sets me up for fear. whenever I have a fear today, I know that I'm in management. I know that I've chosen me versus God, and I haven't given that area to God. And I say to myself, well, you know, that's not my job. Remember, fear is worry, right? And I took the third step. I took it today. And when I take the third step, I really have a contract with God that God has worry. All I have to do is stay close to Him and do His work. And He has worry, and He'll give me everything I need. So when I worry, I'm doing God's job. Now, there's a reason why I don't want to do God's job, because I'm not God. And when I try to do God's job, I make a mess of it. And that's really the essence of the third and fourth step. And it says, so like fear of losing your job, or fear of health issues, or fear of a relationship, or fear about money, or so many of those fears that are centered on areas of your life that you're still controlling, and they can change each day. So when we do the second step proposition exercise, you'll see how helpful that is to recognize right away where you're relying on self. And so that fits right into the next question. It says, we asked ourselves why I had them. Why did I have these fears? Now, I can't remember. It was years ago when I read this paragraph for the first time, but it was as if these words came out and just smacked me in the face. It says, wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? I said, holy cow. And you know what? It was so obvious to me that that was true, and I realized that I wasn't a bad person. I had done bad things because I had the wrong manager, and I had relied on me. And I also understood that that's the best that I thought I could do at that time. I didn't realize there was a different way. I don't know about you, but when you grew up and you were young and a little boy and you wanted approval, you figured out what you had to do to get that. And I spent my whole life seeking that. It was exhausting. And even when I got something that made me feel good, it didn't last, because then there was always the next thing you had to do. It was never enough. So I couldn't feel, I couldn't correct my fear through external things. It was, my ego could never be satisfied enough, Chuck C. says. And that was true for me. And now I don't have to get my ego filled that way. I just want to do God's will and serve Him. And it says, wasn't because self-reliance failed you. Does anybody think that's true for them?
Yeah.
It says, self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. So here's the key. It's just three paragraphs, really, on fear. These next two paragraphs are so powerful and so well written. So we had self-reliance, we had fears, we've done our inventory and our resentments, we've seen how anger has destroyed my life and the harms that it came out of my fear and anger. So I want to do a better way. Anybody want to live a different way? So it tells us right here, I have to live on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. Sounds good, doesn't it? Anybody want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to do. You have to learn to work the steps constantly to practice that. Because the hardest thing about trusting God is trusting God. And in the beginning, I think that's why people don't make it. They don't want to let go of the second part of the first step, that their life was unmanageable by them. They don't want to see how their self-will caused their problems. They don't want to let go of that. And then they die. So I have to trust and rely upon God. And we talk, there's many lines in the big book about who our reliance has to be on, right? Our reliance must be on Him. It must be on God. It can never be on me. And the 10th step is really where you inventory all day long where you're relying on you versus relying on God. And we have a choice now. We don't have to stay relying on me. I can stop. I could say, God, I shouldn't be the manager here. God, I'm going to give this to you. I don't want to hang on to this anymore. I don't want to run this area of my life. Remember, after the third step prayer, what does it say? It tells you to read the prayer. Then it says, remember, before you do this, it says, after the prayer, it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. What, ready to do what? at last abandon myself utterly to him. Any area that I'm not abandoning utterly to God, I'm going to have fear. And so we still get it. Remember in 10th step, we read it. We watch for when fear crops up, and we ask God at once to remove it. And we recognize with God that fear is just a manifestation of self, and I don't want to go there. I don't have to go there anymore. Isn't that a great freedom? Just think about it. I don't have to be afraid anymore unless I choose to be. It says, and remember, reliance upon God, it tells us one of the promises on page 63 of the third step. It says, I have a new employer, being all-powerful. He will provide what I need if I keep close to him and perform his work well. So if I keep close to him and perform his work well, then I'm relying upon God. And it says, I trust infinite God rather than my finite self. Now, in the beginning, when you're new in recovery, you may have to read this paragraph every day. You have to read it five times a day and just think about it and change the way you see things. That's why I have sponsors. So when you're angry or afraid, you call your sponsor and he can help you see it differently. It says, I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. There it is again. What is the role God assigned me? Now, why is that important? Sounds really good, doesn't it? Because if I'm playing the role I assigned me, then I'm going to have fear. And then I'm going to be angry because the play won't go right. And I'll have an assignment for everybody in the world, and they don't have the script. And I'll be upset with them. And then I'll feel sorry for myself. It's not fair. And my motives were so good. Anybody ever do any of that stuff? It sounds good, but it's really harmful. It was killing me when I came in here. I trust infinite God. I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. Now here's what you're supposed to do. Just to the extent that I do as I think God would have me, and I humbly rely on him, does he enable me to match calamity with serenity? Now, I've had many spiritual experiences since I've been in recovery, but I still remember on August 10th, 2008, 7:30 in the morning, I was downstairs. They called from the hospital, and my first thought was I was irritated because I wasn't on call. Does that sound like an alcoholic? And then I picked up the phone, it was the ER, and they told me my son died. And so I remember, and I looked like this, and then I saw this line. Now who put that in there? God. I saw this line. I said, just to the extent that I do as he would have me and humbly rely on him, I can handle calamity with serenity. Think about that. And this is the greatest promise, maybe in the big book, because what it tells you is you can have hope and joy no matter the external circumstances. And I was studying the scriptures today, and I believe it's in Matthew. It's in the Sermon on the Mount, and they talk about this, how we have hope and joy if we stay close to God, no matter what the situation. Anybody think that's good? Mm-hmm. So if anything bothers you, anything happens, bad things are going to happen. I mean, people get sick, people die. Accidents, all sorts of things. What they're telling you is you may not like what the external circumstances are, but if you stay close to God, he'll help you get through this with serenity, with peace. It doesn't say that you won't have sorrow or you won't be sad, but you'll get through it. You'll have a power. You'll have a spiritual power available to you. It's a great promise, and I guarantee it's true for me. And I think if you try this, you'll see it's true for you. And then here's the final paragraph. It says, I never apologized to anyone for depending upon my Creator. I can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Some people make fun of people work the steps or make fun of us or think it's silly. Well, that's their choice. How's their life going? Maybe it's great. I don't know, but I need this. It's the way of strength. I have a strength from spirituality that I could never have on my own. It says, the verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. So if I have fear, I can't have faith. And it says, faith without works is dead. And if I have faith, then I'll have courage. The faith will give me the courage to trust God. Now, When you come in here, you may not know that. But if you do the steps enough, you know it's true. You know when you do the steps that if you do these actions, if you ask God to remove your anger or take away your fear, you know it happens. It happens. And so you're an example of this. You don't have to argue with people. Just say, okay, try this and let us know. And it says, all men of courage, they trust their God. I never apologize for God. And here's the key three lines of fear. It says, I want God to demonstrate through me what he can do. The St. Francis prayer, right? Prayer, channel of peace, how I can be. Let God demonstrate through me what he could do, not me demonstrating with God's help what I can do. I read it wrong for a while. God's going to demonstrate through me what he could do, and he can't do that unless I allow him to work through me. And so I have to get out of the way, and that's all we're trying to do. And if I get out of the way, God will come through and demonstrate what he can do. We asked him to remove our fear. This is the prayer. I say, God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what he would have me be. It's not do. AA is looking at how we be causes what we do. And we have to change our thinking, and then that changes our action. And how does God want me to be? And you ask him, you pray on this, you meditate on this. I'll tell you something that works for me. I don't know if it'll work for you. It's always love, patient, kind, tolerant, compassionate, considerate. That's set many places in the big book. The other thing is they had the four absolutes in the Oxford group. Absolute love, absolute unselfishness, absolute purity, and absolute honesty. So how does God want me to be in every situation? If I be loving and tolerant, which it says on page 84 is our code of living, my actions will be good. And if I'm loving and tolerant, I'll see things so I won't be even get afraid and I won't get angry. I'll see them differently. So that's the prayer. Anytime I'm afraid, I ask God to remove my fear. And I have to ask God to direct my attention to what he would have me be. So I have to let go and let God in to direct me. And then it says, at once we commence to outgrow fear. I don't know about you, but every time I read these paragraphs, these are some of the most spiritual paragraphs I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And they really follow Scripture very, very, very closely, especially Sermon on the Mount and the book of James. And so we'll open it up and we'll look at fear next week. We'll look at some different aspects of how we do the fear inventory. On the site, I have that fear inventory thing that I wrote and I've passed out a million times. You can get on the site, how you look at fear, how you do the columns. There are a lot of different ways of doing the fear inventory. We'll look at that some next week too. So I thank you.